Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to Flu Talks, a show where we talk everything engineering, business from a local scale all the way to a global scale. I'm your co-host, Anthony Mwathi, and I'm joined by Michael Wanyoike.
Were you waiting for me to say my name there or?
Yes. All right. You could look at my stare looking at you.
Hi, everyone.
How are you doing, Michael?
Fine, thank you.
Before we get to the content of our show, let's get to our news segment.
Indeed. And since I have fewer news items, I think I'll go first. No, you should go first because you have more than, like, I'm the filler. You know, the filler episodes in anime, and you carry on.
Our first news segment is Salesforce buys Slack in a $27.7 billion.
US.
That's key to know. For those who don't know what Slack is Teams communication application. I think they are one of the biggest or the biggest competitor to Microsoft Teams, or vice versa. Teams is the biggest competitor to Slack. Depends on how you look at it.
Because,
but Slack is the one who pioneered the whole Teams communication space. So this is pretty exciting. And another key thing to note is that Salesforce is a CRM powerhouse. They've actually recently surpassed their $20 billion US in annual revenue. So yeah, that's pretty exciting. I hope Slack finds a new home in Salesforce and, you know, everything will be butterflies and smooth for them as they go on to their next journey.
Yeah, hoping that it doesn't go the way of some of Microsoft's acquisitions, for example.
And or even Google acquisitions.
Google acquisitions. Yeah. And other failed acquisitions where the product doesn't quite anyway.
It changes. It evolves to something else.
These are opinions rather than the news. So maybe we should actually continue with the news. And this is where I check in with my news item. Amazon recently had their what? I forget the name of the
keynote. It's not really a keynote, but
it's an event.
Yeah.
I forget the name, but anyway, one of the key highlights of the whole thing was EC2 Mac instances for Mac OS.
These are the new Mac Minis.
I believe
the one with the M1 chip.
Hold up. Nope. Not the M1 chip. So this is straight off the Amazon announcement.
Yeah.
So Amazon Elastic Compute Cloud, Mac instances for Mac OS are generally available. Built on Mac Mini computers, EC2 instances enable customers to run on-demand Mac OS workloads in the AWS cloud. EC2, okay, so blah, 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 skip. EC2 instances are powered by a combination of Mac Mini computers featuring Intel's 8th generation 3.2 gigahertz Core i7 processors and the AWS Nitro system, providing up to 10 Gbps of VPC network bandwidth. Anyway, many technical things that you can read for yourself if you find yourself so interested. But something that is of interest is that there was a recent update to the license agreement by Apple, that Apple software and hardware can be leased to individuals, organizations for a minimum period of 24 consecutive hours. And because of that, these instances cannot be used as part of the auto scaling group. So there's some fine print you'll need to look up when you're setting up. Yeah, when you're provisioning and what have you.
Yeah.
But it's an exciting time for Mac developers.
I would assume so, but they're not the first ones to sort of do Mac Minis as a server setup.
No, they aren't.
I forgot the name of the company, but I think it's a gaming company that used to use Mac Minis as a server farm. But that brings me to my next news flash item. We're going to bring it closer to home. So an East African e-commerce platform, which is a B2B e-commerce platform named SoccerWatch, has just announced the launch of electric tuk-tuks to its delivery fleet in Uganda, making the vehicles the first to be used commercially in East Africa. So for those who don't know what SoccerWatch is, it's a B2B e-commerce platform connecting African retail stores with multinational companies such as, you know, Unilever, P&G. They try to enable informal retailers to order products at any time via SMS or mobile app and receive free same day delivery to their store. Have you heard of SoccerWatch before?
Can't say I have.
I believe you have, you just don't remember.
Well, I mean, other than when we were discussing what to consider as the, or what to give as the news items, I don't think I'd heard of them before that. Or maybe I had, but anyway, fill me in.
Yeah, it's a pretty exciting company. I think before, I think about a year ago when, or 2 years ago when they were starting up, I went and had a talk with the co-founder of SoccerWatch. It was pretty exciting conversation, you know, trying to see what they're up to, what they're doing. Which is like, at the time they had like 2 million seed funding, and now I think they're about 14 million in their Series A funding. So I'm pretty excited to see where the SoccerWatch journey ends up in. But it's pretty exciting to see that they've tried something like electric tuk-tuks to try and improve their delivery experience. So that's exciting. I wonder why Kampala though.
I don't know, but I can give you a fun fact about tuk-tuks.
Yeah.
Do you know where the name came from?
Absolutely not. Tell me.
The sound the tuk-tuk the tuk-tuks make as they move.
I see. Yes. It's kind of a da.
Yeah.
Naming, but it works. Tuk-tuk-tuk-tuk. I can see it. I see it.
I don't know if that'll be included in the final version of this, but I hope so. I think you go, then I'll do the last news item because it's really not tech related.
That was my second.
Oh, that was your second. Ah, yes. All right. Well, in that case, mine is.
But I could add one more if you.
No, I don't want you to. Okay, it's fine. It's fine. Since you've rejected me. It's
no, but this one is pretty exciting. Like I think. Let me just, I'll just mention the title for it. But an African genomics venture, 54Gene, launches a clinical research program in Nigeria. So that's exciting for you all medical-oriented people. But I'm happy to see that finally, like, telemedicine, or rather medicine development can finally be done on the African continent. That gets me excited.
Well, speaking of the African continent, and more specifically Kenya, excuse me, there has been a strawberry-flavored. How do I put this? Strawberry-flavored HIV medicine or medication is set to be made available in 6, if I remember, African countries, with Kenya being one of them.
Yep.
Now, what's special about this medicine is that it's specifically targeted towards children. Now, for apparently a large proportion of HIV medication is sour or bitter tasting.
Yeah.
And for infants, young children, that makes it a bit difficult to take, in addition to the general size of the pill.
Yeah, yeah.
Now with this, it's first of all strawberry flavored, so it's
appealing to the kids.
Yeah, it's appealing to the kids, and the size is fun size.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, or finally, it's dissolving. So it dissolves. So it's like those vitamin C.
Yeah, those tablets that you.
And it's supposed to be a lot cheaper than some of the medication regimens that have been out there. So,
wait, you mentioned it's on trial, or you said it's already in production?
It's said to be. I don't know if I'd put it in. I'd say it's on trial, but I guess people can look it up. I mean, I don't want to actually commit to something on record that I'm not entirely sure of. So I'll need to check it out myself. But 6 countries, Kenya, etc.
Yeah.
Strawberry flavored. That should be enough for you to go online and search for and, you know, find out more.
But either way, like any of our previous episodes, anything we mention on the news flash or the news segment, you'll find it on our description box on whatever platform it is that you're listening from. Well, that concludes our news flash. So, Michael, what's our topic today? What are we conversing about?
I'm Charles Foster Kane.
Oh, the movie quotes.
Not Michael. But anyway, yes. Today we are talking microservices. Now, microservices is a trendy word, or maybe it was trendy like a couple of years ago among developers.
Yeah.
But that is the subject of our discussion for today. And while many among our audience may be familiar with what microservices are, perhaps maybe we should start off by defining what they are, you know, just for the novices among us who may not be too familiar with that. So care to handle that definition, or should I?
Yeah, sure.
Ah, excellent.
So microservices are also known as, it's also referred to as a microservice architecture. I'm sure most people have heard of that one in the tech community. But basically, it's an architectural style that structures an application as a collection of services that are highly maintainable and testable, loosely coupled, that's a big one, independently deployable, organized around the business capabilities and functionalities, and largely owned by a small team. So I believe like the whole point is the architecture enables the rapid, frequent, and reliable delivery of large, complex applications.
Does that
pretty much define it?
You just turned into a dictionary right now, but that I think that
pretty much covers it, I believe.
Yeah, that covers it, I would say. So it's essentially an architectural thing rather than oh, do you develop with microservices, for instance,
as a common question might be asked.
Yeah. So it's more of the philosophy, I guess.
Yeah, you could put it that approach. Way.
It's an approach to developing systems. But I guess the next question is, how do I know that, or how do I know when microservices would be useful in something I'm building? I don't know if you have like a case in point. No, actually, before that, what contrasting architecture or approach to development would there be? Something that maybe many of our listeners are familiar with.
Right. I'm sure most people, whether they know it or probably don't know it, for the longest time we've written monolithic code. And what that really is your application is just one large code base. Right? Is, for instance, let's look at something like Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So from the video codec, you know, application itself, to the managing of accounts, to the managing of payments, to what else is on Netflix? To, you know, doing the whole movie series listing,
mm-hmm.
Business logic and database, all that would happen in one large code base. That would be now a monolithic architecture. And mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's what a lot of developers have been writing for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's one big block of code versus different little bits of code, or different little blocks of code that interact but are also separate.
Yeah. Like, I believe like it's heavily guided by the business capabilities or needs.
And that takes us to actually the question I just raised.
Yeah.
How do I know when to use or when to follow the microservice architecture
mm-hmm.
when developing something or developing an application.
Right. I think that's not a one-shoe-fits-all sort of answer to it,
mm-hmm.
but it would reach a certain point where would be beneficial to decouple your code base,
mm-hmm.
right? As a business, you would try and look at how much traffic, for instance, let's case in point Netflix,
mm-hmm.
Is each user or a collective amount of users interacting with my application.
Mm-hmm.
You find that, for instance, authentication is once in a month interactivity.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the time it's cookie based. There's nothing you, no one is interacting or trying to log in every single time
mm-hmm.
that you end up on Netflix.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. So there's no need to bundle all that into one huge code base when it's really not it's not really being used that much.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you might want to increase your resources in the video codec or the video streaming service itself,
mm-hmm.
because 99.99% of every logged in user is trying to watch something,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? So you might want to dump all your resources into that particular service.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm trying to answer that question. I probably went on a different tangent.
You probably did, but yeah. I think that kind of gives us an idea of how to look at things. In a sense of, do you have different, actually, business logic would be a good way to look at it.
Right.
Because what is the main thrust of what you're building, for yeah. example?
Yeah.
And what different possible interactions there might be.
Yeah.
Such that if it's just a static site, for instance, well, okay, a static site. That's a bad example. That's a bad example in a before and after.
Yeah.
Let me not say a static site. Let's say what? Feel free to help me out here as I'm racking my brain.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So if not a static site, something that would work well with, you know, that monolithic approach. Give me examples.
Yeah, like a case study that would work nicely.
Yeah.
Jumia.
Wow, okay, that's a bad example.
That's a really bad
that's
example.
That's a bad example.
That wouldn't work nicely. Think like an input-output system.
Input-output system.
Like file management system.
Ah, yeah, that works actually. That is actually a very good example, file management system,
mm-hmm.
where you don't really have too much going on
yeah.
and you don't really need to loosely decouple things. So assume somebody goes about building that file management system and they listen in and are trying to figure out, should I go the microservice way or the monolithic way? Just to narrow things down, those are the two contrasting examples you'll use, right? What thought process needs to go into that decision?
For you to know this is time to make the shift.
Mm.
I believe there are a couple of forces, if I should call them, that would drive you to start considering a microservice architecture.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is there is a team of devs mm-hmm. working on the application.
Mm-hmm.
So think 50, 100 people working on the same application. Next is if you need sort of when you're adding to your engineering team,
mm-hmm.
is you need your new developers to be quickly productive. I believe that also could be a potential force for you to want to break down your application. Then the application must be easy to understand and modify. So it doesn't have like a very steep learning curve for any developer,
mm-hmm.
either shifting teams or onboarding to the new team. Especially if your company practices continuous deployment of your application and continuous integration. So if your team heavily relies on the CI/CD pipeline, I think that would be a huge driving force to shift. This is probably one of the biggest, is if your application runs on multiple instance, rather, if you run multiple instances of your application on multiple machines in order to satisfy scalability and availability.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So mm. picture if you're deploying your monolithic into different zones just to serve traffic and stuff like that, you might want to start considering microservice architecture. Then lastly, I would probably argue is if you really want to take advantage of like upcoming technologies and frameworks and, you know, new programming languages that are, you know, they say they're faster and stuff like that. So like if you really want to leverage that, it's probably a good idea to decouple and consider microservice architecture. It gives you that flexibility to rewrite a small bundle of an application in whatever framework or language or emerging technology. Yeah, I believe those from a business and an engineering decision point, those are some of the key forces that would probably drive you towards that direction.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here and say, I mean, all of those things could possibly work, minus the exception, minus maybe using different technologies across the application stack. Even then, though, I'm thinking maybe like front-end, especially like front-end things. Okay, front-end is a bit of a cop-out here, but it is possible to have two different technologies powering the front-end running concurrently. So maybe with the exception of that, it would be, I mean, it would also make, those are things that could also work for a monolithic application where you have, I mean, you have CI/CD, you run different instances of the application and whatnot. So what really would drive someone, I guess, to go the microservice way? I mean, like, I don't know if my point is coming out clearly. Like
my application is running perfectly fine. My
I have my dev continuous
team is fine. I am precise. Setting up with my CI/CD.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I believe it will all boil down to maintainability and how testable is your application at that scale. Because now you might be a guru in version control, but it's going to mess you up along the way. Like, how many people can actually work on the same code base at the at given time in a monolithic application? That, I feel, would be the first pain point that you will experience. Your merge errors might start cropping in, or, you know, losing files, or, you know, code inconsistencies. You'll find that it's going to be very hard to come up with, like, you know, our company's best practices, for instance, like this company's or this tech team best practices will be very, very hard to control, because you're having 50, 100 engineers touching the same files, interacting with the same many things. It's very, very hard to maintain and test. I believe that's like the biggest point that would probably knock off that argument.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So scale,
maintainability, testability.
Scale rules everything.
That sounds
like what you're saying. Scale rules everything.
I mean, that's one way to look at it. Yes.
And another way to look at it,
the benefits of shifting.
Ah. All right.
Like, scale is not just one of the benefits that you would get with a microservice architecture. Like, when you go a microservice way, essentially every app, if I should call it,
mm-hmm.
would be a smaller bundle, right? So meaning you can now go to fine tune it to look at all the nitty gritties of, let's say, performance, to, you know, how is this code being compiled? You know, you can actually really go down to compiler level just to try and increase your performance. That's something that would be very, very hard to do on a monolithic architecture. Again, since not everyone will be conversant with what the hell are you writing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, again, once you write one part of the code, that doesn't necessarily mean your whole application will go down. So, because that tends to happen in a monolithic application, is you might do one change somewhere and one comma, or, you know, one space, depending on the language that you're using, and boom, your whole application is dead, which is very hard to achieve in a microservice, I mean, if payments is down, it's just payments that is down. If it's authentication that is down, it's just authentication that is down. So that's like one of the huge benefits of a microservice. And I think that would be called fault isolation. I think that's the industry word for it. It's called fault isolation.
It would be, well, there are certain application or project types that lend themselves better to the microservice architecture than others. Which ones come to mind, like right off the top of your head?
E-commerce sites, mm-hmm. that's for one. Streaming services,
mm-hmm.
real-time based services like Slack that we previously mentioned, fintech products. So this would be like a banking application or fintech, or rather finance as a service, meaning you're rendering, let's say, payments locally, like M-Pesa, for instance, would be highly scalable, only if it was a microservice architecture. Yeah, those are some of the things that just straight come to my head.
So right
but
now,
but then again, it's on a use case. But
that's true. So right now, what all I'm getting is web. Web lends itself better to a microservice.
Definitely. I mean, because web, you see the beauty of a micro. I mean, you could achieve the same with a monolithic, but the beauty of a microservice architecture is it could be API driven, meaning it's just plug and play for anything else that you're interacting with.
This sounds like a topic we can probably talk even down to our own experiences with microservices.
But to cut you short, mm-hmm. like there are also some drawbacks mm-hmm. to microservices.
Of course. How could I forget?
Yeah, in itself.
Mm.
Like one of them, based on my experience so far, would be a deployment complexity, right? So it's you need to know what's going on and what's playing where. Like in production, there's also like the operational complexity of deploying and managing like a system comprised of like multiple services. Like think of it this way: it's if you are a family. Right, it's trying to keep track of 10 children. What are their preferences? You know, what do they like to eat? When do they like to wake up? You know, oh, this person doesn't like this color. Like, if you picture it, that's technically how like that deployment would look like. Is how do you get everything to work in harmony and, you know, in a very synchronous and effortless way? I think that's one of the biggest drawbacks to our microservices. Another one I can think of would probably be like increased memory consumption. So technically the microservices replace like the n monolithic application instance with n times one, or rather n times m instances, service instances, right? Because now you're used to running one thing and it was just memory intensive on one application, but now you have 10, 100 services running on the same CPU, for instance. Let's say you're deploying in the same server, then now you're having like a whole spike in memory usage, because now every application is demanding its own computation time and stuff like that. So each service technically would run in its own JVM or equivalent. Like if it's a Java application, it will be running on the JVM, which, you know, necessitates for, you know, isolation in the instances and stuff like that. So you get an overhead of, you know, n times as many, in this case, JVM runtimes that you need. So that's I think also another drawback that most people would probably need to take care of, which would drive back now if I distribute my services across the multiple instances, enters deployment complexity.
Oh my.
Yes.
So you really need to be sure that this is what you want and that this will work in the context of my application.
All right. I don't think it should be on the spur decision. You really need to think about it and do your cost benefit analysis, because skill also becomes a thing that you probably have to invest in, because in a few episodes later we had mentioned something like Docker. So Docker would be like, how do you orchestrate all these services to work together? That's a new skill set if your team didn't have, would either need to learn or hire someone to solely act as the Docker guru.
Kubernetes
gurus, someone,
etc.
etc.
Yeah. I remember the days when we had our
first experience with
microservices. Yeah.
It was a steep learning curve.
It was, and it didn't help that we were learning on the job, as it were.
Yes, at the time.
But you have to do what you have to do, and in this case, we had to.
I mean, we took a leap of faith, and so far, it's paying off.
So far, with some little asterisks.
Yeah, definitely, because I believe code that you write when you're young is definitely worse than code you write when you're a much more experienced developer, because you're looking at things from a different angle.
So efficiency also comes into play, and exactly. All those.
Yeah, optimization and, you know, trying to remove a recurring problem, N+1 problem and stuff like that. So it's exciting times.
Indeed. We will probably revisit this topic at a future point in time. Especially since this is more of a top down view of things.
It's a very high level conversation.
Yeah. It's not too technical, and no. I feel like this is something that would benefit a lot from a more technical view or overview. So we just might revisit this at a later point in time. But for now, I guess that concludes the episode. The guy behind the mic has been trying to get us to adhere to certain timelines, and
yes.
And I think it's in all our interests to abide by those timelines. But before we conclude properly, the guy behind the mic also pointed something out to follow up on your question earlier on the news item I'd mentioned. Yeah. It's not in testing, it's being rolled out. So
they've already finished the whole human trials and whatnot.
So it's being rolled out. So yeah, just a slight, you know, just a slight clarification. If you've made it this far, if you haven't, well, you aren't hearing this, and that's
too bad. You missed out.
Yeah, too bad you missed out. But yeah, that's
yeah. As we wind out, I'd like to hear from people. What are your experiences, if any, on the microservices? Let's have a discussion on our social channels, at Fluid Talks Everything, from Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Also, if you want to be a guest on our show, hit us up on any of our channels, like I mentioned above, at Fluid Talks on the social media channels.
And if you just want to find out about, you know, our story, our journey, and
consult with us.
Yeah, all those things, all those nice things that can also be not very nice, but, you know. All those nice things, let me put a smiley face on that, a positive note, a positive spin, all those good things, hit us up on social,
on your platform of choice. Thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next one. FTG out.